Thank you, everybody, and thank you for coming. I see that a lot of people are going, but I think the most important session is coming next. And so please, I know you've been here long enough, but I would like that you stay, because this is the panel that is going to be very interactive. This is where we can have all the time to ask questions. And the panelists, we are asking them to stay also so they can answer questions and stuff like that. But apart from that, I just want to say thank you to the mayor, thank you to the first and the second panel. Thank you, everyone. Masoud, you
can. Okay. I want about 15 or 20 chairs, okay? And we're going to have, each of you are going to have a chance to speak for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And then what we're going to do is open it up, and we want people to come up and sit in the chairs, and we are going to just ask what's on your mind, okay? You've been sitting here for quite a while and haven't had a chance to share what's on your mind, so we want you to do that. And we've got some people over there by the flip charts, and they're going to be hearing what you are sharing. And they're going to be hearing it through four filters. They're going to be hearing for questions. They're going to be hearing for your fears and concerns. They're going to be hearing for your hopes and wishes and possibilities, and for any information or data you want to share. So they're going to be recording that as you speak. And what I want to do is, when the people here have had a chance, except for the people that are on the panel, but as you come up, once you've had a chance to share, vacate your seat and let somebody else come up. Are there any questions about that at this point? I will do that, yes. Thank you. So what she's asked is if the panel members will stand up when they speak, because they're no longer on the stage. Okay. And you will not be on the stage, so when you come up here, would you stand up and also when you speak? You have one more question? That's our hope, yes. She was asking if you will hear when the people speak, and yes, we hope you will. So I have an announcement, just to iterate what's already been said. There is a follow-up to this, and we hope that'll be the first of many follow-ups, and that's going to be on Tuesday, February 21st, 21, at 6:30 at the Madison Public Library. That's the Central Library downtown.
I speak in English, but I need it.
Ah, so we have a gentleman here who wants to speak, and we'll need an interpreter. Okay? Okay. So when he's ready to speak, okay, do you want to sit down? Okay. Please sit down here. Okay. Very good. So why don't we start?
And thank you, everybody. And good evening. My name is Alhaj Jalo, the Imam of the Medina Community Center. And we're here to express or to talk about some of our concerns. As a Muslim, as somebody who believes in God, we have instructions from God, the reason why He created us different. He said in the Quran, He created us different nations. We live in different places, so we can work to know each other, to make life more interesting. So I think the things that we're seeing right now is not directing us towards the correct direction. So as people who know the reason why we're here, we come together to make sure that we don't let the whole nation to go to the wrong direction. We don't let fear to control us, and it's coming to us. How can we defend that? How can we reject that? It's to come together, people who have different beliefs, people who live different places, come together to know that this land was created for us, all of us, and we should go against anything that will go against or ruin those values. So thank you for having me here. Thank you.
There are many seats up here. If people who are way in the distance want to come up and join us closer, there are many seats up here now. Please help yourself to them. Okay, thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Muna, and I will also be speaking on behalf of the Muslim community here in Madison today. I am not nearly as well known as others on this stage have been, unless some of you frequent the Starbucks on East Washington, where I happen to work, and mess up drinks often, apparently. I may not also have the legal knowledge as many have on this stage, but I think my unique perspective lies in what it's been like growing up as a Muslim American here in the United States. So, it's been a crazy 9 days, huh? As a young Yemeni Muslim American woman with an African American partner, I'm terrified to live in a country that now has a physical manifestation of overt racism, Islamophobia, and hatred as the president. I haven't found the courage it takes to call any of my Yemeni family in Dearborn, who have been fighting effortlessly to bring my father and other loved ones into this country for the past several years. Whenever I would visit Yemen, my little cousins would ask me to tell them stories of how great America is. My uncles would tell me how they can't wait to come here, the land of opportunity, praising this country on the values it's supposed to uphold. And for a recovering Muslim woman, I hate to say that the prejudice didn't begin with Trump. The microaggressions, the blatant ignorance, the long security checks at airports, the racial profiling, it all existed, and it's been increasing since post 9/11. But with Trump in office, none of that hatred or ignorance is hidden anymore. It's all out there. Now it's just being justified and excused and written in the lines of executive orders or aggressive tweets. We need to stick together and use this anger and frustration to further fuel our actions. We will overcome. We cannot let the hateful rhetoric of Trump defeat us. Especially as a young Muslim woman, proudly wearing a hijab, it's a daily thing I fear, because as symbolic as the hijab is for representing Islam, it also makes me a target for more microaggressions, for hateful speech, and God forbid, for hateful acts. I read the news and I see mosques being burned down, innocent Muslims being shot, stabbed, or pushed onto train tracks simply because of how they look. And it's all really scary. And I think this is where we need the aspect of other communities, our own community, allies, in collaboration to take place. I remember a few days ago, after Trump won, one of the churches here in Madison left a note card and some flowers on the door handle of the Eastside Mosque. I'll admit I was afraid to go close to it due to my paranoia and thinking it might not have been as innocent as I hoped it was, but I was relieved to see it was a note of solidarity and of strength. And Trump wants a country of division, and we need to make sure it's not that. It's through this hierarchy of division that overt and institutionalized prejudice and racism has thrived, and the only way to fight back is to stick together, is to be angry, and is to resist in every way that we can. This new administration isn't just a threat to my Gambian, Somali, Syrian, Mexican, Native American brothers and sisters. This administration is a threat to every minority and marginalized group in this country, and that is why we have to work together. And so I call on community leaders to plan events like this that bring us all together. I call on citizens to treat your neighbors kindly and with love and to get to know them. And I beg you all to teach yourselves, know your privilege and use it to help vulnerable communities who don't have that same privilege. Teach yourselves about faiths and practices that you don't know. I can tell you firsthand, the mainstream media does not know Islam. Furthermore, I call on each and every one of us to act on the duties we have as American citizens and write to our lawmakers to make conscious votes for Congress, for local politicians, and to make sure that the power really does stay with the people and that we remember love trumps hate and we will overcome. Thank you.
I want to remind you that there are people willing to give you a piece of paper and a pen if you have any thoughts, ideas that you want to share, and thus far we have three. So there's plenty of opportunity for you to express what's on your mind in paper writing to the back as well as we're doing it here up front.
Hi. My name is Becky Schiegel, and Wow, first of all, you're still here. It's been a long afternoon. So I am thrilled about that, even with some moving and some rearranging. I have the really great privilege at this moment to be here on behalf of what's been going on with a few multi-faith groups. So One of the main thing that I was asked to talk about today, for those of you who are looking for somewhere to get involved right now, is something called Sanctuary, which you may know a lot about or not. I'm not talking about sanctuary cities. The sanctuary movement, some of you know, started back in the 1980s, where congregations would use their building to literally let people move in when they were facing having their family being pulled apart by deportation. What a lot of people don't realize is that the movement never stopped and the deportation certainly never stopped. So at this point, there are now 800 congregations all over the country, churches, synagogues, mosques, that have their doors open and are receiving and are ready to let people to move in if their families are at risk of being pulled apart. But what you may not also know is that sanctuary is so much more. In New York, it looks like people going with people to any kind of check-ins maybe that they have to do with immigration authorities. In Philadelphia, it's called Sanctuary in the Street, and it looks like something like 1,000 people ready on text to have an address come to them when an immigration raid is imminent, to come make some noise, because we all recognize that we do not wish to live in a country where people can disappear quietly in the night, right? And I think, though I've not verified it, I am guessing that Sanctuary in the Street is part of what happened yesterday with Sanctuary in airports. I think so. So we have a group here, Dane Sanctuary, that we've been forming over the last couple of months. This is a partnership. You met Mario from Voces de la Frontera. It's Voces de la Frontera, Centro Hispano, and then a group, Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, that has a table outside. You can sign up with us or just find Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice or Voices or Central. And we're a multi-faith group. You may not know, we've held a couple already of meetings earlier this month to get people information. We're learning. We had like 100 people come to these meetings from a long list of congregations and faiths. We welcome you from any faith, no faith. This is going to take congregations as well as just individuals acting on their own. There are two things that I think are really important to say at this moment. One is that I respect that the folks I'm working with, that we respect that oppressed people have been working against their own oppression for a long time, even when the rest of us are not paying attention. This is not new. The other thing I want to say, I don't think it's been said yet today, is that when you think about being part of Sanctuary, first of all, it's a partnership. We'll figure out what it needs to look like here, and we will ask what is needed of each other. But second of all, I think it's important to remember at all times that the person seeking sanctuary is always being more brave than the group of us that feel secure enough to offer it.
My name is Isidore Knox, and I'm here representing the NAACP. Most of you are familiar with the NAACP, and I have to say it's an organization that has been fighting for decades on civil rights, human rights, and protecting the rights of all citizens of various colors. This recent immigration policy doesn't seem very new. And most of you who are familiar with the history of U.S. immigration policy knows that since its inception, it has always been managing who gets to come to be part of this American experience. I was looking at reading something recently about, I think it was 1926, and it showed how there was open immigration for English people, which we've always had, there was a lot more open integration for the Irish. Then it starts going down the list for Western and Eastern Europeans, Jews. But it was interesting, in 1926, there was a closed immigration for black people. Not surprising. Matter of fact, I had conversations with a lot of my people, and we talk about, you know, we aren't even immigrants to this country. Immigration presupposes that you choose to come somewhere. And most of my ancestors did not choose to come here willingly. So we have a long history of oppression, and that's what it is, not only coming from individuals, but from our own government. So we're in this fight. We've been in this fight. Our national CEO has sent information out about how we oppose the recent legislation that's coming down, or actually executive orders. It's not even legislation. And so, you know, we all have to recognize that we're all in this together. We all are in this together. And I think what someone talked about before, trust me, if they oppress one of our neighbors, they'll eventually get around to oppressing you. I think one of the things we have to be real honest about is this is a white supremacist effort here. We look at our immigration, and it's no accident that it seems like when we get to people of color, we always have some restrictions on immigration. So this isn't new, and we really want to make sure that all of our organizations have to come together, be part of a coalition to resist these kinds of attacks on civil liberties. And that's exactly what they are. And whether you're doing it legally or whether we have to march and show ourselves, we got to petition our representatives. And if they aren't acting in the way that we feel, then they need to be removed and voted out. And so that's the challenge that we have here. And clearly, it's not just based on color. It's based on religion. Next thing you know, we'll start weeding out other people based on their identity, and we know where it's going from there. So we just wanted to be here in solidarity. We're going to be part of that fight up front, and we want everyone to know that, you know, together we can succeed.
Before we continue with the panelists, I'd like to give one of the audience a chance to ask make his comments. What's on your
My name is Jose Luis Gomez. I'm living here for 16 years. My question is, ¿me atreves a decir? Quisiera decirle a Skywalker que antes de que él saliera, a ver si nos podría dar licencia a todos, porque realmente ahora tenemos dos problemas. Ahora, que nos, a veces, miedo a que nos pare la policía y miedo a que la migración vaya a llegar a detenernos. Y aunque hace el año pasado a mí me pararon 4 veces por no licencia, no les tengo miedo, simplemente a veces me siento un poco atemorizado. Y eso es todo lo que quería decirles, simplemente que Skywalker se toque el corazón y probablemente nos dé una licencia para poder manejar más tranquilos y estar un poco más seguros. Eso es todo, gracias.
His question was, I would like to ask Scott Walker when he's going to give us driver's licenses, because there's 2 fears going on currently, and one of them is being stopped by police officers. I was stopped 4 times last year, and I'm not afraid, and I would like to tell Scott Walker to please take it to heart and give us our driver's licenses.
Hola, buenas tardes. Public speaking is not my forte, so I decided to come today to this event because I wanted to tell you a little bit about myself and also tell you a little bit about my work. I know we're running late, so I'm not going to be I'll try to keep it short. I am standing. I'm short, so sorry if you cannot see me. All right. 27 years ago, I moved from my beloved La Paz, Bolivia, and I see my Bolivian compatriotas, yay, to this country due to my mother's sickness, and it's a long story, but here I am. Met my husband, Palestinian. We have two kids, two boys, and I never felt this way, and I am sure many of you are feeling the same way today. I always thought I want to, you know, go to, you know, study hard, get my degree, work, and do better, not only for myself, but for my community. I became a citizen, and my two boys have been born here. We live a regular life like everybody else. My boys love sports. And so just the other day, my youngest one was playing hockey and was called by another player, go home, go back to your country, boy. And I am a social worker, and I think I have a thick skin, and I hear a lot of stories about the families that I work with. I work a lot with the Latino families, and you are going to hear stories like our friend here said, many, many stories like this. But when it comes to you, it really touches you, numbs you, and I couldn't say anything or do anything. I was so angry where after the game, talked to my child, and in a way that I wanted to reaffirm him, this is your country, you know. And he was really angry, but I was really sad and got emotional. And the worst part is like refs were around, and I'm sure they heard it, but nobody will say that they didn't hear anything. So we're going to experience this type of things a lot, as you may know. So that's what's happening. And the other thing that I want to share with you, it just reminded me when our friend was talking here about driver's license. So here's me. I am a citizen. I have my driver's license. No tickets. So I was driving to Baraboo to a conference, and suddenly I'm in the Beltline, and I realized that I changed my purse, and I realized that my driver's license was not with me. I freaked out. I was like suddenly putting like, okay, what's the speed limit? Are there, you know, police officer, I mean, cars, are they going to stop me? What am I going to do? And it really, you have to understand that, you know, when we come from different countries, law enforcement is very different in our countries. And locally, nothing happened. I was very cautious. And anyways, so it is real. And sometimes, We tend to ignore that. As I was saying, I'm representing the Latino Children and Families Council here in Dane County. We're very lucky to have partners, allies, and we do a lot of work. As my friend Shiva was saying, we put together these resources in a sort of kind of panic mode, but, you know, we have something here with the Latino community service providers here in Madison and Dane County. We have monthly meetings that happens, LASUP, Latino Support Network. We have the Latino Health Council, the Latino Children Families Council. I see Salvador. We have the Latino Education Council. We have events. This part of the panel says, you know, they told us to tell you how do you want to get engaged. There are so many opportunities where you can get engaged. Go out to Fiesta Hispana, Dia de los Niños, all these celebrations, and immerse yourself in that. We have La Movida. I think I saw the Montotos around here. Where that's our channel of spreading the word. So we're doing a lot of great work. I'm so proud of that. I don't feel alone in that instance. And I just want to tell you, pick up this information, and I know we're running out of time, but let's do events like this. A group of us are getting together. We're going to do some potlucks. Stay tuned for that. United Way is putting something together. So a lot of things is happening. Although it's a very gloomy, sad day, you know what? we're here together. We're going to find more allies, partners, and we, you know, united, we will survive and we will thrive. Thank you. Muchas gracias.
I'm going to say hola because I'm, as a third generation Japanese American, I like doing things like that. I'm here for, with two hats. I'm the chair of the Wisconsin Organization for Asian Americans, but I'm really speaking for myself. The Asian community is very diverse itself with different languages, and so we have our own challenges. I do think that when the realities that we've been talking about are discussed, the triggers I feel are that the Japanese Americans who were Americans, 120,000 were put into concentration camps, 10 of them with barbed wire and armed guards. And so my family was in for 3 years, and yet my father and my uncle were in the armed forces for the United States. So this is a different kind of reality. And I think it's something that runs very deep, that this is a possibility. And for some, that may be sort of a far-off kind of hypothetical. For our family, more research is showing that some of the generational cultural traumas are something that really affect many generations. And so I think it's important to remember that. And the other hat that I have as a therapist is that we're all talking about these children that we're working with, these families, these individuals who are domestic violence victims, sexual assault victims, children of child abuse, they're already experiencing trauma. On the other hand, when they are getting the kind of bullying at school, it adds the community violence that we're seeing, and sometimes communities of color, because of that tension, take that out on each other. And it's hard to see as an adult to see children already demonstrating that. So for us, we're giving a lot of advice to parents, and what I'm realizing is we need to give this to ourselves first. How are we processing the things that we're doing and experiencing so that we're not passing that on to our children as victims? We are not victims, and we need to be proactive, and being here today is one example. But getting out of our comfort zone and really connecting is the way to really immunize all of us, so that we see that we can perpetuate that kind of kindness. There's a wall in the National Japanese American Museum in California, in Los Angeles. The entire wall are photos of folks that were fighting the internment camps. All that time and the risk-taking that they took as elected officials, as businesses, and as individuals, but they stood up. And I see many leaders here today, fortunately, are elected officials and policymakers and individuals who will do that for us. And I know that I will hope that I will do that as much as I can when these kinds of really oppressive things are happening day to day. So, thank you.
So, what's on your mind today?
I'm an Iranian American. I've been here almost my whole life, and I just want to put a shout out there for the Iranians and what they're going through. As an attorney, what I've seen in the last few days are families coming into my office saying they haven't seen their husband or children in 2.5 years. They've gone to visas. They've been rejected. There was a student on the border at University of Buffalo who's a dental student. Her parents live in Canada. She goes to school in the U.S. She can't go to her bedroom across the border because she won't be able to come back to school on Monday. There's a professor who had a talk at EPFL in Switzerland where Google and Apple and all the research scientists in the world were gathering, and the night before he had to call and cancel because if he goes there for a day, he can't come back. There are people who have e-visas. These are investor visas who have already, to get the visa, they've already purchased a hotel or a restaurant or a business in the United States. They've already moved their life savings here. They've gone through the background checks, the security clearances, the administrative reviews, and now they're being denied. And there's a researcher right now in Vienna who went there to receive an award and can't come back to his home and lab in the United States. What message are we sending to the world when people have complied with the U.S. immigration laws and that has no value because they can't come back? And that was my message, is to please stand with the Iranian Americans where this ban has caused devastating consequences to them, massive anxiety. It's torn families apart. It's hurt the UW system, the academic institutions. We will stand with you guys, and we hope you stand with us.
We have a question here from one of the people in the audience. Which organizations, locally or nationally, can actually benefit from the help of those of us who are not knowledgeable about community activism? We're collecting these questions. We may not answer everybody's questions, but we'll collect them over here, and they will get recorded, and we will work with them as we move forward and in the follow-up to this event.
My name is Lori Zimmerman. I'm the rabbi of a local synagogue, Congregation Shari Shemayim. And members of our community wrote a Madison Jewish Pledge of Solidarity and Sanctuary so that we could reach out to our Muslim and Latino neighbors. And solidarity does not entail a pledge, but it's a first step. And solidarity is complicated, and it's difficult, and it takes patience, and it takes building coalitions. And so if there's anything that I've learned from my heritage and my people growing up with stories of Nazi persecution and having lost a lot of family, what I've learned is that we cannot turn inwards, that we have to work in coalition. And I really hope that this is just the beginning of lots and lots of people in Madison really coming together with goodwill and being willing to do the difficult work. As a Jewish community, it's complicated, and we have to have those difficult conversations. And so I hope that this will be the beginning of many difficult but also wonderful conversations in activism and organizing.
Good afternoon. All power to the people. All power to the people. My name's Eric Stephen Upchurch, but that's not important. I've heard a lot about unity and coalition, and let's come together. Let's march. Let's actualize. Let's show our people power and make a difference. And I want to get us to think about what real people power actually looks like and what the results of real people power actually is. This is not a game, folks. This is not some Sunday afternoon flick that you watch happen as you eat your cozy meal and then fall asleep to some reality TV show. This is real life stuff happening. And slowly but surely, it will happen to each and every one of us if we do not do something for real, right now. We've become far too complacent with this distance between the things that we need as people and the people making decisions around those needs. It's been the status quo for so long, and people march, people get mad, people get angry, and what we continue to see is this distance. And the things that now over 200 citizens and organizations in this city are dedicated to making happen is collective impact and weighted direct democracy. Collective impact, weighted direct democracy. What I do, who I am, my last name, it really doesn't matter. What does matter is our real people power. I love the idea of unity, but what does it look like? For real? We can talk about Let's all come together. But what does it look like? This is a wonderful, beautiful event. There's so many people that are still here, and congratulations. But what happens after this? So we need a mechanism for everybody to be able to say what it is that they need, what it is that they want to see change, and for us to be able to unite around those things in an organized and respected way, so that elected officials have no choice but to see very clearly what the mind and the needs of the community are. The name of this platform that you are all creating right now as we speak is called the Council of Communities. Write it down. Go online. The Council of Communities. All of these different coalitions and groups, we all need to come together for real. And great, potluck, let's eat. And after that, let's get organized in a real and concrete way. This ain't no game. So let's come together and let's build something that is real, actualized people power. The march after the march. Council of Communities. I got a question here. I'm supposed to read. How can we organize on the neighborhood level and act to protect our neighbors? Very good question. I suggest Council of Communities. Three tracks. No, for real. For real. I'm serious. Three tracks. Voicing, informing, organizing, voicing. What do you need? What do you need to see change? Any individual can answer those questions. Any organization can answer those questions. Any neighborhood, any apartment building, any household can answer those questions. Informing. Second track, what information supports what it is that was just voiced? Now we have two tracks where a stranger that knows nothing about what our needs are can go to learn about the needs, and they can become informed. Last but certainly not least, organize, where the community at large, neighbors, the previous question before, what do we do if we don't know how to organize? The community at large can organize and say, I agree or I disagree with the first two tracks. I agree that Allied Drive needs their grocery store, or I disagree. And in that way, we begin to see the mind of the community boil to the surface. But Allied Drive should get the final say-so. The most impact. This isn't a majority rules. This is a most impacted rules. And if you are the most impacted by your situation, I bet you want to be in the decision-making seat. We got people that don't understand us making decisions about us, and we've been too okay with it for too long. Please, let's all do something about it. Love.
And what this audience member suggested is at the end of the day, sort yourselves out in the room east to west and hold up a piece of paper if you want to talk with people. So I throw that out there. If you choose to do that, you're welcome.
Good evening or good afternoon, everybody. My name is Haywood Simmons. I'm a life coach, community advocate, and just a lifelong fan of Madison, Wisconsin. I moved here about 25 years ago to play football at the University of Wisconsin. I have not left yet. I get to play a lot of roles in the community, from basketball coach to football coach to life coach to personal trainer. But what I like most is working with people. And since this election, a lot of stuff has happened. And business has picked up because people are afraid and people are scared and wondering what their future looks like. And they say, Haywood, what would you do? How did you go from a 350-pound, angry, diabetic, mad African-American male to a compassionate, gracious person? Empathy. I drive on this Beltline in Madison. I drive on 90 and 94, and I see us treat each other like we don't know each other. We're neighbors. You're headed to the shop or school with my kid, or my kid is coming to school with you. And we drive and treat each other like we don't know each other. I ask you today, with Donald Trump as our president and the future uncertain, for us to start practicing more empathy with one another. If someone's trying to get over, maybe they're in a hurry. Allow them to get over. someone's crying in public, maybe offer them a hand, a hug. Hugs are okay. If you don't, I mean, be safe, but hugs are okay. Let people know you see them. Please, let's start to have empathy for one another. We all come from different places, and we're so quick in this environment, it seems, to react and to share our truth with people. There's another term I've heard. Speak your truth, speak your truth, speak your truth. I like to challenge you to live your truth. To live your truth. Speaking is one thing. Eric asked us, take action to live your truth. If you want to be respected, let's start show more respect to one another. If we wish to see compassion in our environment, compassion in our law enforcement, let's practice some with one another. I challenge you, please. Compassion. Thank you. And as we close today, I learned the term. There's a new study out about heroism and what it takes to be a hero. We need more heroes. In the study of heroism, it was found that not that we don't have so much bad in the world, there just aren't enough of us standing up for good. Heroes have some things that they do, if you anybody in here interested in becoming a hero. They're already in position. They don't just jump in front of trains and save people. They're already looking to help people. They're actively involved on a regular basis in their community. They're giving people. They give. They volunteer their time. They help others without a fee, without a charge. They show up and they help people. And lo and behold, when a big emergency shows up, that person who's been carrying people across the road, that person who's been helping people, feeding people, an emergency, a big event shows up, oh, they jump out and they're the hero. Heroes are just everyday altruistic people that care about their community and love one another. So my challenge to you today is to live every day on that belt line, to live every day in your job with more empathy. Where are they coming from? Yes, they may sound crazy. Maybe they are crazy. But listen, to give people the benefit of the doubt, and then compassion, to share compassion with them, understanding of where they came from and be willing to give and to share. And in our personal and daily lives, if there was anything we could do to get ourselves ready for this battle, gratitude. Before you leave the house in the morning, think about those things you're grateful for. The people that have gotten you this far, the community that even, the family, the ancestry that even had you care about being present in this place, in this moment. Strengthen yourself with gratitude. If we wake up with anger and fear and hate, that'll be what you show to the world. If we can wake up in the morning with gratitude and appreciating where we came from and identifying with the inner strengths, every day, wake up with it, go to sleep with it, be a hero. Thank you all.
It's 5. It's a little after 5, and we were committed to being done at 5. We have had little opportunity for any of you to speak, and so we will stay for another 15 minutes or until about quarter after. There are some people up here who have things to share, and if others want, they are welcome to come up and sit in these chairs, and we will keep going for another 10 minutes or so. So please, if you want to go, if the seats are full, just stand back and wait until people are done and then sit down. So you have been up here. Please.
Hi, my name is Judith, and I want to tell you that I did vote absentee, but I was in Ireland during the election. And even though I feel terribly alone, we aren't alone in the world, because the Irish people as a whole were very concerned and very aware, and it was just nice to know that we may feel like we're alone in this country against a big power, but there's a lot of strength in the world, too, and people who are behind us and know that what has happened here is a disaster for all of us. We're in it globally. But mostly I wanted to talk about something that, well, where'd you go? You talked about at the beginning, and that is being so personally upset. So I want to talk about terrorism, and terrorism of a different kind. It's terrorism of your own government. Since I got back from Ireland, I've been doing something, nothing actually. I've been so disillusioned, and my heart is broken. I can't believe we would do this to each other. I can't walk around with people anymore because I feel like I'm walking around with people who are hiding so much hate inside of them that they would vote for a vile man. My heart is broken. I've been disillusioned in the last year in the United States. I used to believe that being a minority was a bad thing, and probably you were stopped by police more often. I didn't realize you were killed by police more often. When Trump first started to run for office, I thought that was a joke. It was impossible. And all I can say is that since something impossible has happened to us and I've been sleeping 10 to 20 hours a day, I've got to get going and do something and not be depressed anymore. And if it could be impossible for Trump to become president, then it has to be possible to make him unpresident.
So the question I would pose to the group is there a connection between the rise in Islamophobia and our military interventions overseas of the last 20 years? And if so, what do we do to rebuild the peace movement, and how do we have the discussion about bringing our troops home?
I want to remind you, if you have not already signed in, left your email or address, and you'd like to be connected to all of this, please do so on your way out. They're still available on the back tables.
So may I have just a word just before? And I interrupted because a lot of people are moving and they're leaving, and it's been a long, long day. And we have heard a lot of information. But what we want you to walk away with is, after you have heard all of the conversation, after your spirit has been agitated, we must now pick up and move into action. Don't just come to a nice afternoon, 2 to 5, and walk away and not do something. The something that we will do is February the 21st at 6:30 at the library. We will take all of this information that we've been gathering all afternoon, and then we will set some priorities. I loved it when I heard the community. The community will decide what are the priorities that we will begin to work on so that we can see some action. So as you filter out, please carry the message that it does not end here. It is just beginning here. Come out on the 21st and let us get to work. And for those of you who still want to have dialogue and conversation, come to the center. We will be here to hear you. Thank you very much.
My name is Shadira Kilfoy Flores, and I have recently been referred to as a full-time activist. You bet your ass. I'm a first-generation Mexican-American woman, and I've watched my neighborhood go from hippies to yuppies to hipsters, and I've been very active and involved in a number of movements here recently. I've been very active and involved in seeking justice for my neighbor, Tony Robinson, who was unjustly murdered. I have recently been to Standing Rock twice to stand with my brothers and sisters and to bear witness to the human violations done against them. And more recently, I filed a formal complaint against Chief Koval for his mean, nasty behavior towards Sharon Irwin that I witnessed. And so in doing that, I had to come up with my feelings about that and try to come up with a public statement around that and kind of the irony around these things coinciding at the same time as Trump coming into office and how I feel I need to stand up against abuse of power, egotistical leaders who've been put in a place where they need to not only be responsible for their own safety, but the safety of the people in our community. So the words that came to my mind were accountability, rules, consequences, expectations, standards, equity, safety, and compassion. I feel that if you're part of an organization, including a community who values honesty, integrity, and transparency, and when you accept a position of leadership, that it is your job as part of that organization to follow the rules and their consequences, because we all must live with the consequences of our own choices. Hold on one second. I would like to personally thank Sheriff Mahoney for bringing back the deputies from Standing Rock. They didn't belong there in the first place. I would like to thank Shiva Badir and our other elder women and men for standing up for a system where we, and Barb, all of you for standing up for a system of, to try to better our community in having a safer, more equitable place to live for everyone. And I do this not because it's comfortable. I do this because it's necessary. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Groundwork Madison, look it up.
Okay, Groundwork Madison, look it up. Another thing to look up is Immigrants United. There's a Facebook group out there, Immigrants United. 8,000 members in 3 days. Please join. Thank you all for being here.